The Conservatives are here for Canada. The Liberals are concerned about your future, your family, your Canada. And the NDP has some practical first steps they would like to take in Ottawa. Those, of course, are the titles of the various platforms currently being promoted across the country. The platforms are, by and large, promises that appeal to the largest number of voters. But so far, this election, there has been a conspicuous absence of issues affecting one particular group of voters, Aboriginal people. And to get a sense of why this is, and also to get a sense of the political issues that are of concern to First Nations communities, we got in touch with Richard Wagamese. He is a journalist and author in Paul Lake, British Columbia. And Pamela Palmater also joins us. Ms. Palmater is a lawyer and an associate professor in politics and public administration at Ryerson University. She is in Ajax, Ontario.
Ms. Palmater, I'm going to begin with you. Why do you think we're not hearing anything about Aboriginal issues in this campaign?
Well, I think it's a matter of a lack of priority to all of the federal candidates that are running in terms of, you know, impact. Who are they catering to? It seems that, you know, for this election, for sure, as with past elections, it's the numbers. Who will have the greatest impact? Who are the actual voters? Which, I guess, seeing as, you know, the ethnic numbers are so high, especially in certain areas of Canada, that's why they, at least the Conservative Party and others, seems to be catering to those votes instead.
And what they call the key ridings, eh?
Yes.
Mr. Wagamese, is there anything in the actual ridings? Are you hearing that sort of that the on the ground a few more of the actual candidates talking about those issues?
Well, not that I've heard, and the only reference that I actually heard was Mr. Layton's comments during the debate. And I think my take on it is a little bit different. I think that the essential reason why we don't hear anything about First Nations issues in leaders' platforms is that our national Native leadership only seems to find it necessary to inform Canadians of our issues and problems when there's either an election or a tragedy. And I think that if they had more responsibility and were telling people the stories of situations on remote reserves or in urban centers on a regular basis, it wouldn't be needed to promote those issues and problems as much as it is now, because they would be doing their function and informing Canadians of the state of affairs and Aboriginal issues and communities.
Ms. Palmater, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, at a much deeper level, that acknowledging these issues and talking about them, and probably part of the reason why the Conservatives don't even want to have a debate on these issues, is because you have to acknowledge some pretty serious things. It's not just about poor drinking water on reserve, but if they're going to engage in these issues, they have to talk about issues of sovereignty, treaty recognition, the many outstanding land claims, the inequity in funding for First Nations. And those are issues that require substantive legal changes, recognition of jurisdiction, and a change in the way funding transfers are made to, you know, provinces and First Nations. Mm-hmm. And so it has a significant monetary and power-based impact. So I think that ends up being the real reason why we don't want to deal with First Nations issues.
Mr. Wagamese, how do you think that you could get First Nations issues into an election campaign? How do you insert yourself into this, into a debate, because there wasn't even a single question in the debates about Aboriginal issues. How do you do that, do you think?
Well, I think Mr. Atwio came the closest to the answer to that question when he said that there were 60 ridings that were could be directly affected by the Aboriginal vote. And if we have 1 million First Nations people in the country, and if the greater majority of those people are in the voting range, if we could find a ways and means to inform and educate our people in their roles as part of a Canadian body politic and encourage them to go to the polls, and then we can cite that specific number and say to the leadership, we have this many electors in this riding who are coming out to vote, and what are you going to do to address those issues? And I think that if we can encourage First Nations people and communities to take an active role in federalism and get out and use the power of the vote, then it's easier to put forward issues into platform campaigns.
But I'll ask both of you, and start with Mr. Wagamese. Why would federal politicians, I mean, you know, we have to realize that especially in election campaigns, it tends to be looking for the votes. So how do you expect them to care if people don't vote in those elections?
Well, you know, my wife tells me all the time, if I don't vote, I have no right to complain. And I really believe that as an individual and as part of a group of people, as part of the Ojibwe Nation, I also believe that's true, too. And so I think that we need to engage in a campaign of enlightenment and empowerment with our own people. And I think that, you know, if we use social media, for instance, if we had a Facebook page to get the brown vote out and inform people about what the potential is if they use their electoral power to influence the mandate and the forward motion of political parties, we could change a number of things, and our issues and our problems and our community ideas and initiatives would be part of platforms, because there would be a significant number of us that would be directly affecting the outcome of elections in ridings and across the country.
Ms. Perlmutter?
I'm not quite so optimistic. I respect the fact that, you know, as First Nations peoples, we're dual citizens, if you will, in our own nations and in the Canadian nation. And of course, we have rights to vote in either place, but it's just illogical for us to be voting for the next Indian agent who's going to control us. The issues that we have to deal with will not be resolved in having an MP in cabinet that will be muzzled by their party or have to toe the party line. There's only so much sway you can have as an individual MP. Even if we voted in five, the amount of impact, especially in a government like the Conservative, is, you know, almost nil unless you're, you know, very vocal, like Senator Patrick Brazeau, for example. But really, what we're talking about is one sovereign nation voting in another sovereign nation's election to put people in power who will then control our lives through the Indian Act and legislation and law and policy. And so I think until the real issues of jurisdiction and recognition of us as a third order of government are dealt with, voting in their election is not going to bring about the substantive change that we really want.
I just want to ask a question about just, I guess, the only references to First Nations communities comes out of an unusual source, an ironic one, which is that a story that the Aboriginal People's Television Network mm-hmm. broke a few weeks ago about a mm-hmm. former senior advisor to Stephen Harper, Bruce Carson, who was allegedly using contacts in the Prime Minister's office to sell a water treatment mm-hmm. system to First Nations communities that would possibly enrich his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. How does it strike you that seems to be the story tends to be the one that is the only one that where is references to your communities?
Well, I mean, I think it highlights part of the problem. You have allegedly friends and political insiders using their connections with the Conservative Party and the Minister of Indian Affairs, allegedly, to make money off of the back of impoverished First Nations. And, I mean, that really goes to the heart of how important our issues are. You have, you know, banks and mineral companies who have no problem knocking on First Nations doors saying, hey, can we hold your money? Can we manage your money? How would you like to, you know, have a take off our mineral exploration? But when it comes to dealing with the real hardcore issues, I've seen very few who are willing to step up and say, okay, let's have this jurisdiction conversation.
Just and the Bruce Carson story, for you, Mr. Wagamese, the irony, I guess, on top of it is that just this week, the Ojibwe community in northwestern Ontario, one of them declared a state of emergency because of the water issue. Against the backdrop of the Bruce Carson affair, how does that play in an election campaign?
Well, it should be front and center. And I think that, you know, one of the things that that strikes me is that when the leaders talk about senior care and about housing and about credit card rates and all of the things that they talk about, those directly affect people in First Nations communities, too. The larger majority of us live in urban centers, and so all of those issues are our issues. And so there's not much to separate us in terms of what's necessary in terms of the election, particularly in healthcare, where it's impossible to, or next to impossible to get good medical care, especially in fly-in native communities. And I think that our media, and I mean First Nations media, is growing stronger and stronger. I've been a native journalist since 1979, and I've watched it grow, and I've watched the changes. And I'm really proud to say that we have a generation of first-rate First Nations journalists now who understand the power of media and understand it as a tool and can put forward our issues and concerns and not wait for leaders to wait for an election or a tragedy to tell Canadians about it.
Mr. Wagamese, Ms. Palmater, this has been very enlightening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Richard Wagamese is a journalist and writer. He was at his home in Paul Lake, B.C., and Pamela Palmater is a lawyer and associate professor in politics and public administration at Ryerson University. We reached her at her home in Ajax, Ontario.